कुतलं भरता स्वार्था सत्यत्वे दाशमे वहि दूरे वायनं तीर्थं लावण्यं केशधारणं कुतलं भरता स्वार्था सत्यत्वे भाष्यमे वहि
sacred place with the word. Yeah. Sacred place will be taken to consist of no more than a reservoir of water located in the space, and beauty will be thought to depend on one's hairstyle. Filling the belly will become the goal of life, and one who is audacious will be accepted as beautiful. He who can maintain a family will be regarded as an expert man, and the principles of religion can be observed only for the sake of reputation. In India, there are many sacred places through which holiness flows. Foolish persons eagerly seek redemption from their sins by bathing in these rivers, but do not take instruction from any of those people who reside in such places. One should go to a holy place seeking a spiritual enlightenment, and not just for ritualistic career. In this age, people tirelessly arrange their hair in different styles, trying to enhance their facial beauty and sexuality. They do not know that actual beauty comes from within the heart and the soul, and that any person who is pure is truly attractive. As the difficulties of this age increase, filling one's belly will be the mark of success. And one who can maintain his own family will be considered buoyant in economic affairs. Religion will be practiced, if at all, only for the sake of reputation, and without any essential understanding of the supreme personality of God. actually calling him a good person and that's really helpful. They describe the yoga ladder in great detail. And they made the point that actually Pranayama is a very advanced practice of civilization. Of course, when we're talking about the bhakti in relation to the bhakti, Pranayama and human activity at the lowest level. So when I read that, I was very intrigued. I was like, this is very interesting. Because when you read in the Vedas, not that I read the Vedas, but our commentators, Acharyas, explain, who have read the Vedas, that there are many enticements given. For example, if you do such and such, ritual, particular activity, you have a beautiful spouse, a beautiful wife, wealth, 10 children, 5 sons, on and on and on. There's so many enticements. And they explain that this is still within Vedic culture. And the reason why the author of the Vedas, which is Krishna himself, interjects these things in the Vedas is because those individuals that have material attachments, they want the Vedas, the author of the Vedas, Krishna, wants these individuals to think about karma. Because if they think about karma, then they'll think about how their actions today will result in fruits tomorrow. And by thinking about our behavior and being responsible for our behavior, we're actually looking into the future. And then the next logical thing to think about is, well, if I have a comfortable life the next life, but that life is also going to be comfortable. And then I have to really look like after that. And at some point, you think about eternal happiness. So it's actually a very important part of Vedic culture is to inspire those who are not spiritually oriented into thinking about being responsible about their behavior. Some years ago, I was watching documentary. Some of you may have seen it. It was produced by a Christian organization, and they wanted to make the point that morality is. You can't actually be a moral person without believing in God. Because we often hear the argument, and I've heard it myself many times, that, I'm agnostic, I'm atheist, I don't really believe in God, but I believe it's important to have a good life, to lead a good life, to be a moral person, and to have principles. So, this is kind of like, this documentary is in response to that particular stance and perspective. That it's actually not possible to be moral unless you believe in God. And it's not possible to believe in eternality at all unless you believe in God. And it's actually a whole logical progression from taking this, to the end. So I'm not going to do that now. But one interesting, intriguing thing that came out of that documentary for me was they were taking interviews with people, and they would first start off with very simple questions like, would you, cheat on the math test in school, or would you, steal your friend's comic book in third grade, or, would you steal music from the internet, things like that. And what they found is that people have even gone, they said, yeah, I'm not good, and I probably shouldn't have done it. And those, who didn't believe in God, they just said, no, of course, why not? But then this really blew my mind, was, and this was like a serious question, they weren't just like making a joke out of it, they're asking a serious question. So at the kind of the end of this progression was, if someone gave you $1 million, and I gave you a little package of Arsenal or some poison, and you knew that, this person kind of cheated on their husband or whatever, but just a total stranger, would you put this arsenic in this water and to kill this person if he gave you $1 million and it guaranteed that you would never, that nobody would ever find out? And the people who believe in God would say, of course not. They go, wow, it's $1 million. And the guy cheated on his life. Or the guy cheated on his life. Because I'd be killing a person. But then the people who didn't believe in God, they'll be like, I don't know. They're like, how about $5 million? $10 million? And the point is like, alright. It's like, it's $10 million, and, anyways, the guy cheated, on his wife, and that's good. And then, some people would say, like, I'll do it even if you pay me, even if you pay me. Just take it out. But it, I'm not really doing it justice, but it really had a profound impact on me how belief in God had so much to do with the morals that we have, the morals that we keep. Because if we don't have a conception of truth that's beyond the temporary, that's beyond mechanistic, that's beyond material, then there's no conception of that morality. I was thinking this morning about how telling the story of the conversation he had with a scholar from Russia, I think it was. It was a scholar in Russia. And we were talking about, there's a scientist talking about what happens after death. And the scholar was saying that after death is nothing. There's, just void. And our life is just this kind of life. And it's over. Because a lot of consciousness is defined by the body. When Prabhupada gave this example later on, that just see that the Persians in India who don't have a PhD, and yet they believe that what they do now is going to impact their life in the future because they believe in the outcome. So the point is that simple for the simple and complicated for complicated, even though this scholar had a PhD, he couldn't grasp the concept of his life after life. And it's such an easy thing to grasp that there's life after life. Not just one grasp, but the other, how educated they are. So, last week, I was talking about how Bhaktivinoda Thakur was really stressing this point of Bhaktivinoda, inward facing, external facing, introspective, which is external, external, external. looking at value and meaning versus looking at external appearance, and looking at inner happiness versus external happiness. And it's a theme that Buster Packer talks about throughout his writings over and over and over. Actually, there's one principle that he talks about, Saragrahi, which is one of his most important contributions. Saragrahi is seeking the essence of everything. And actually, Ramamukhya, one of the gurus, gave a beautiful quote on the Shri-Gurus, saying how everything is ultimately spiritual. That there is some kind of moment out, there's some kind of controversy in the movement. Materials can shine in spiritual reason, because we just think that time is true purpose, and actually everything is ultimately spiritual. And that's actually a very important point, that everything is spiritual. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who made, he really stressed this point in Vaishnava, is called Gandhi. He's called Gandhi, because his style Rahi is always seeking the essence of everybody, and everybody's relationship, and all the teachings and the scriptures all over the world. But essentially, the truth is one. So the external appearance of someone, I was thinking how Acharyas sometimes make the point that you will see devotees, devotees with empty mala, demons actually, in disguise, empty mala. And then you also see people that look like ruffians. It's a very heavy statement. Have you heard that? There's some demons looking around the world, empty mala. But also the converse is true, that devotees exist, but you can't even talk to them. I was thinking about the story of Hindu Vijay Mudi. I was actually reading that story this morning. And this one detail that I forgot, that he would actually, the description of his home was, there was a hookah. Smoking from a hookah. So they had a hookah. So Pundarik Vidyanidhi is originally was the father of Radharani Krishnamani. And he had silk and clothes and curtains and his feather and his hookah in his room. And of course, Gadadhar Pandit, he was very austere. He was very I can't remember who was in the Kunda's idea for Jindisa so we got him over and he seemed like that. And then he quoted that verse from the Bible account how such a divine person is equal to be the most wise of the ultimate position. And when he heard that verse, he just broke out and he started ripping his clothes, actually. He started ripping his clothes in ecstasy. So we can't, we can't identify the Vaishnavas based on their quote-unquote morality and attraction to sense gratification. I was thinking how one of the core principles is sadachar, which is our behavior. But even our behavior can be external. We've seen that so many times in our great acharyas. Their behavior is inconceivable. We're talking about Sadhya Satana. Thank God for that Sadhya Satana. I have something to talk about. talking about how Srila Prabhupada would say that if you don't feel like paying obeisances, you should pay obeisances. Because by paying obeisances, you actually feel like paying obeisances. But we have to, we're making the point now, we have to think about why we're doing what we're doing. I was listening to the classical by Guru Maharaj, and he said that if we go to the temple because we're thinking that if we go to the temple, people will be thinking of why we're not going to the temple, then the result will be they won't think that we're not, they won't be thinking why we're not going to the temple. Or if we decide to go to Mangalarti, because if we go to Mangalarti, then people won't be thinking that this person didn't bleep. So, then Krishna reciprocates and no one will think that we're blooper. But, my Guru Maharaj made the point that why are we hanging on to these petty desires? That if we have such small, teeny, petty desires, then Krishna will reciprocate with those. And we'll get something bigger, like Guru Maharaj made the point of pieces of glass. But if we actually have the proper desire, I want to please Krishna, I want to purify my heart, then we won't, and Krishna will reward us with a pure heart. Krishna will reward us by the Vaishnavas being pleased with us. Krishna will reward us by giving us love. So we actually have to be very attentive to our desires. That the root cause of everything that we do ultimately is desire. And Bhakti Tirthankara, you know, say that we have to put inventory. What is going on inside of us? So, I mentioned that Bhakti Murthy Thakur, one of his main contributions in the Sara Gaha in Bhavani. So, this morning I was reading an essay that was written about one of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's most important contributions. And actually, scholars that have studied the life of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, they actually claim and propose, and many others also, that one of the most important contributions of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is this concept of seer and seeing, vidvishya vichara. And this is actually a very profound contribution that he gave to the world of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. Because when we are conditioned, it's very natural to think of ourselves as the enjoyer. And everything that we see around us is the object of our enjoyment. But it's not about it. That's not it. I said that in spiritual life, there's so much enjoyment. There's so much beauty. There's so much sensual stimulation. There's so much love. So much rasa. We're reading it right now in the summer. We're reading about the nectar of devotion and all the symptoms, ecstatic symptoms of bhava, anubhavs, bhava, sanjaya bhava, sakti bhavas. It's very, very beautiful, and the experience is so unbelievable. Like the one book that is written by Thakur, and it explains the 14 stages of grief and Mishka and when you read it, you just, my God, what's in store for us in the path of bhakti? It just makes, you know, our desires and anxieties and tribulations and materials and so insignificant. And what does that mean? I mean, the point that during Vishnu return, seeing the sea, that even in the spiritual world, when you're having a spiritual experience, you have to have this concept happen. You have to really imbibe your mood that I am to be enjoying and not be enjoying. Even in the spiritual world, where the very greatness is infinity times the very greatness of this situation, where the pleasure is infinity times, where the beauty is infinity times, where the rasa is infinity times, where the relationship is infinity times, even then, in order to enter into that world, we have to see ourselves as seeing. We have to see ourselves as being enjoyed, not being enjoyed, not being seen. And Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he elaborates this extensively in the Amrita. He talks about how that the love and devotees of Krishna is where the gopis are actually seeing the world through Krishna's eyes. Think about this. They are actually projecting themselves in Krishna and seeing the world through Krishna. Not just thinking about Krishna's pleasure, but experiencing Krishna's pleasure through Krishna. And that we are, and that the gopis were simply mirrors of Krishna's happiness. This is how deep the devotion is. And actually, Acharyas actually give the example of the Rasa Leela. It's like Krishna looking in the mirror. In this Rasa Leela. Have you read that? And Krishna looking in the mirror. He sees his own reflection. It's as if Krishna is, Krishna's beauty is the Rasa is just. The more and more you read about this, what does that mean? What was his, Prabhupada had Bhaktivedanta, what does that mean? Had Sajjana Purushottam, right? That was his prerogative. So if you read some of the articles from Bhaktivedanta Maharaj, he has written in the Sajjana Purushottam, and that, over and over and over again, seeing and seeing, that we are not objective, we are subjective. That you're reflective. So I was reading this morning into pastimes of this thing, where he alludes to or references in the Shiva Chan. I think I really mentioned this in the previous class, but they're actually quite entertaining. But so many pastimes, many other times. There's one pastime, this one gentleman, he was demanding an object. He was a very kind guy. And he went to the Gaudiya Math, and I should be respected. And I was like, where's my friend? I think either Buckus or Lethemar is talking directly or he told us to something. So that is the Galop Jumbo gonna enjoy you? Or are you gonna enjoy the Galop Jumbo? And I was asked actually a few weeks ago, I read this one quote of Buckus and Lethemar. He said, if we take Mahaprasad to appease our hunger, or if we take Mahaprasad because it tastes good, we are a massive sin. We're just massive sin upon sin upon sin. It's just so heavy. Gosh. every time I'm taking Mahaprasad to alleviate my hunger, I'm massive sin. So Bhakti Santamaraj, he said that when we honor Mahaprasad, we should actually be meditating. This Mahaprasad is enjoying me. And it's really hard to think, Mahaprasad is enjoying me. I'm not enjoying the Mahaprasad, I'm going to actually enjoy me. There's another story. This is actually a famous story. Bhakti Santamaraj. Mahaprasad is non-different from Krishna. Krishna, we're not enjoying Krishna. Krishna's enjoying us. That's the whole point. Right? Krishna's the enjoyer. The supreme enjoyer. That's the whole thing about Gaudiya Vaishnavism. Because there are places in the spiritual world where, like, we hear in scripture that in Sarvukya, Samukya, in the same formation, in the same form, merging. But the devotees, the highest devotees, they actually reject these five forms of liberation. So, the gopis, again, that's on Vaikuntha planets. Those five forms of liberation are on Vaikuntha planets. The gopis and Goloka, they actually reject all of those five forms of liberation. And that's why they don't want to have the form of Krishna. They want to have the form of the gopis because they want to be enjoying it. It's actually really, really important to understand that, is that we are being enjoyed. I was reading in Krishna Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on the 10th canto. He was explaining how in the Gopi Gita, or it was actually not in the Gopi Gita, near the five chapters, or five principal chapters in the 10th canto, which talks about the highest rasa of the love of the Gopis and Krishna. And when Krishna abandoned gopis, there was symptoms of Udmar, which is complete madness. And in that bhava of complete madness, the gopis at one point, this is actually considered the highest point of madness. It was when the gopis were saying, "I am Krishna." Now that saying, "I am Krishna," is worlds, universes apart from someone saying, "I'm Krishna," who is an impersonalist. They're universes apart. Yet externally, they're saying the same thing. "I'm Krishna," and the gopis are saying, "I'm Krishna." And when the gopis are saying, "I'm Krishna," is because their bhava, their mood, their meditation, was they're meditating on Krishna so intensely that the only thing in their consciousness was the form and the beauty and the love and the ecstasy of Krishna and his happiness. That they could think of nothing else except for Krishna. where they actually, that the ecstasy was so intense, they actually got to the point where they said, "I'm a fisherman. I'm a fisherman." Of course, but immediately after that ecstasy, they came out of that, and they saw themselves in the boat. But there's been tons of ways to make this point. Do you have a microphone? Actually, you're expanding upon what I was just saying earlier about Krishnadas Kaviraj. His explanation was that the gopis, they're experiencing Krishna's enjoyment. And when they experience that Krishna's enjoyment, it expands their happiness. And Krishna seeing the happiness of the gopis, Krishna's happiness increases. And then the gopis' happiness reflects off of Krishna's happiness, and their happiness increases, but Krishna's happiness increases. So the only point why we're happy is to give happiness to Krishna. So we should, that part of the Adilila, Krishna's Kaviraj, this is so deep. This is the highest philosophy that ever mankind has ever seen. The point that you made is the more you know, the more it is expected of you. I remember hearing another class, my brother, he said, someone was asking a question of someone who takes prasad and celebrates prasad, and that's all they do. And they don't want to go beyond that. Basically, the answer is that it's as you learn more, and if you're actually learning, you'll want to do more. So it's to be expected that you, in the beginning, of course, all you do is take a shot, and that's how a lot of people become devotees. But the idea is that it's supposed to grow from there. It's supposed to expand from there. So, but it depends on how much you know. So now that you've learned more about Krishna consciousness, and that we have what it means to go back to God, that the whole point of Krishna consciousness is that complacency is the enemy. That in the beginning, thinking for shy is wonderful, but it can work. It can work. And surrender more and more and more.
The next question is,
my experience with fucking
that's
something.
Just,
yeah. You know, I've read a lot of writings by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and his mood, he says things, my understanding is he says things to nudge us to get more, to become more and more serious in our Krishna consciousness. It's not meant as a judgment, but also the context of who he was speaking to also is important. So many of these quotes were directed to brahmacharis. So the meaning of the acharya is that the acharya is never satisfied. He's never satisfied. He's the disciple. The greatest of the youth. So it's pushing, pushing, pushing. And we all know Bhaktisiddhanta is very heavy. He said some very heavy things. But that heaviness is mercy. It's pure mercy. It's love. Deep love for his disciples. Is that what you were doing? What about you doing?
Thank you for bringing this point about the child. All things for God, all in one. As I do. Probably in the morning, afternoon, evening, whatever. Anyway, it's a very important point, and I was thinking, how is it? Okay, I understood the point that we shouldn't be for sense gratification or for filling our bellies, but I understood when you mentioned that it's not that we enjoy prasadam. Not prasadam enjoys us, and then you're saying how Krishna. So I really got an understanding of that, and I want to share that, was that Krishna only enjoys one thing, and that is rasa. It's rasa that is devotee. And so while we're taking prasadam, what it means that Krishna is Krishna enjoying or Mahaprasadam enjoying us, is that when we take the prasad with relishing it, that, oh, this is Krishna, I'm so fortunate that I have Krishna so tasty, Krishna so, with that mood, that appreciating Krishna, then Krishna relishes. So it is for us to appreciate Krishna, that Krishna relishes that rasa that we are having as we take the prasadam. So that was the thought that I had as how we need to take the prasadam and how Krishna enjoys it.
Yeah, actually, more than us meditating on how Krishna is enjoying us, Arjuna, it's more about the devotee relishing the meditation of how Krishna relished the prasadam. So, when we're taking prasad, we're thinking, how Krishna must have enjoyed this. So our enjoyment is through Krishna's enjoyment. That's big Vishya Vishad. The seer and the seen is that we're subjective. We are enjoying through Krishna. And Krishna, his experience is all that we care about. So, what is Krishna seeing? What is Krishna smelling? What is Krishna tasting? Who is Krishna hugging? You know, that's all we care about. If we're suffering, you know, the 8th verse of the Shastra, you know, just fully encapsulates that. Who cares what happens to me? Because my happiness is whatever Krishna is experiencing is what I'm experiencing. If Krishna's happy, I'm happy, even if someone's cutting my body into many parts. If Krishna's experiencing the pain, that's what I'm experiencing.
Prabhupada writes in the introduction of the Upadasamrita, advancement in Krishna consciousness depends on the attitude followed. So it has a lot to do with your attitude. But just in case you're worrying about enjoying prasadam, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he served prasadam, he knew his devotees what their favorite preps were. And this described in Chaitanya Bhagavan how you would serve to each devotee what they like. And he would just say, now just give me what give the devotees what they like. But the things that each one knew them that they liked. And also it says when he served prasadam, he couldn't serve small. He was like Vaisheshika. When they served the prasadam and Vaishir, he said, Vrindavan Das says he would serve enough for 5 men on your plate. That's how Lord Chaitanya did it. So, but you have to have a devotional attitude and a submissive, humble attitude and know what you're doing. But not to worry that there's nothing light eating that might happen to God.
Yeah, and that actually, so this good dish of charge doesn't negate that. Because just as we are thinking of Krishna's pleasure, Krishna is thinking of our pleasure millions of times more than we can think of. So just like we're doing what we're supposed to do, but somewhere, Krishna's probably doing that. He's already seeing the world through his devotees. Krishna's already doing that. But that doesn't mean, oh, Krishna's there, that's, I should do that too. I'm going to see the world through my heart. No. Krishna's seeing everything through his devotee's eyes. Krishna's seeing everything through our heart. Krishna's seeing everything through our nose. Krishna's seeing everything through our heart. But that doesn't mean we should see everything from our nose and everything from our eyes. We're seeing everything through Krishna's heart. Just like Krishna's doing for us, we're doing it for Krishna. That's Rasa.
This time I'm on number 4. The 4th one. So when we take the time, we are pronounced it. So that's also represented. That's how we make the dance.
Many levels of understanding what we're talking about. Many levels. One is that this is the power of digestion in our living beings. So if you extinguish the power of digestion, you're definitely not getting to Krishna's presence. You're overworking. Another point is if if it were actually seen on it as the sun, there would be absolutely no waste in any level, and no gluttony in the world, and no desire to practice and engage in a private space. But this pleasure, if you really want to engage the sun, that's so much. You pick up the biggest possible scene and feed the most mouth that you possibly can. And that gives pleasure to Krishna, and that gives mercy to being digested by his power on a grand level. Krishna loves that, yeah. And that's his function, okay? But another aspect, more material aspect of beside him, Krishna's all aspects of his mercy, including chastisement, are expressions of love. And it should include the recognition of him, which causes him to be loved by the person who recognizes him. And the reason why he bestows that mercy on others is that he recognizes him and loves him. And that should suffice for the moment.
I remember Padi Vishwaguru told me one time that when he's in line for prasad, and there's like paneer sabji, he actually asks for the Brussels sprouts and keep the paneer there and just give him the Brussels sprouts. That's how asking it is. Thank you. Dhanta, Srimad Bhagavatam.